collapsed over the gap. He came down feet first, stumbling. Rico caught him. "You should have rolled," she said. "Next time," he replied. Bennett joined them. They charged across the rooftop toward another building. A buzzing noise quickly intensified in volume. They were halfway across the rooftop when a trio of blue and white drones with flashing lights mounted to the tops cleared the edge of the building ahead.
"Stop! Put your hands up!"
The voice was deep and tinny through the drone's loudspeakers. Isaac began to slow. Rico and Bennett didn't. They raised their pistols and started to shoot. The drones reacted immediately to the threat, firing back and taking evasive action. Too slow. The rounds ripped into the machines, shredding through delicate parts and sending them crashing downward, trailing smoke as they vanished from sight. Rico made the edge of the building first, leaping the gap to the next. Isaac picked up the pace again. He hit the edge of the rooftop and pushed off, launching through the air. He was halfway across when he realized he didn't have enough speed and wasn't going to make it. A rapid heartbeat later, a strong arm wrapped around him, grabbing him in midair. Bennett flew easily over the gap holding Isaac, and they landed roughly on the other side, tumbling to a stop. Isaac clenched his teeth, his ribs twinging from the landing. Bennett hopped back up, holding out his hand.
"Come on."
Isaac took it, and Bennett pulled him back up.
"You're hit," Isaac said, noticing the three small darts implanted in Bennett's shoulder and chest.
"Stun rounds," Bennett replied. "Put a charge in me."
Isaac could see his smile through his helmet visor.
"Civilian law enforcement isn't equipped to handle clones."
"Less chatter, more running," Rico said. "Ike, you okay?"
"Pause," Isaac replied. "It's only my pride that's hurt."
"Don't compare yourself to us, you did great."
"For a normal human, right?"
"You did great," Rico repeated. "Come on." They made it to the building's emergency stairs. Rico swiped her wrist over the control pad. A red LED flashed.
"Shit," Rico said. "Abel, do you copy? My chip's dead."
There was no response.
"I've got it,"
Bennett said, swiping his wrist over the panel. The LED flashed green.
"They haven't figured out yet whose ID I'm using."
"They will now," Rico replied.
"Too late."
He pushed open the door.
"Ladies first."
Rico smirked and headed into the stairwell. Isaac went in behind her, with Bennett taking the rear. They bounded down the steps two and three at a time, rushing to the 40th floor. Rico led them out of the stairs and across to the lift, tapping on the control pad. It left them static in the hallway while they waited for the cab to arrive.
"What is this place?" Isaac asked.
"The main hold of the Dove," Rico replied.
Isaac recognized the name.
"The Dove? You mean the generation ship?"
"That's the one."
"This is Metro?"
"That's right."
Isaac couldn't believe it. He had heard people talking about the ships while he was stationed in Dugway. He knew they were putting cities inside them. He hadn't realized he was in one of them now. The lift arrived, doors sliding open. They piled in and started to descend.
"The settlers who landed here used the blocks to build out Dome 1, Rico explained. "Everything in here now is a reproduction. There are 19 blocks arranged in a square around the main Congress, one for each of the ships that landed here."
She glanced at Bennett.
"I expect opposition when we hit the ground. Good news is we caused enough mayhem, it'll make it hard for any more assassins to come at us."
"What's the bad news?" Isaac asked.
"They're going to send in the CSF, Bennett replied. "We've got about 4 minutes to get clear of the hold before the cavalry arrives."
Isaac had a vague idea of the size of the space from the renderings he'd seen.
"Is that possible?"
"We'll make it happen," Rico said. "Bennett, stun rounds."
"Roger," Bennett said.
He cycled the round from the chamber and then slipped the magazine from his gun, replacing it with another one, this one marked with a square of green at the bottom.
"Ike, don't shoot anyone," Rico said, swapping out her pistol's magazine too.
"Roger," Isaac replied. "Don't let me get shot."
"They'll be firing stunners too. It'll hurt, but you'll live."
Isaac glanced at the counter for the lift. They were almost to the bottom.
"Stay behind us," Bennett said.
The two clones moved in front of Isaac, guns raised and ready.
The lift cab slowed to a stop as the counter hit zero, and the doors slid open.
14. Rico. Rico's eyes flashed over the lobby. The civilians had already cleared out, leaving two squads of law enforcement officers spread behind limited cover, three behind the registration desk, two behind a couch, four more in a pair of doorways on either side of the room, and one standing front and center ready to order them to stand down. Like that was going to happen. She felt terrible about shooting the law officers, but the stun rounds would only knock them down and keep them frozen for a few minutes, which would be enough time for them to make their escape. If they were able to escape. The whole mission had gone sideways. Someone else on the outside was playing games of their own and had nearly gotten to Isaac first. Abel was unresponsive, Hyrie had gone silent, and the Centurion Space Force was no doubt on its way. Would their special starship be there when they arrived? If they arrived? There was no time to question, no time to doubt. The lift doors finished sliding open. Bennett was already shooting. She didn't need to communicate the objectives with him. She had worked with Bennett, her Bennett, long enough to know how he would approach the situation. She filled in the gaps, focusing on the two behind the couch. The lone officer in the center of the lobby was already falling to the floor, his body paralyzed by Bennett's stun round. "Ike, stay behind Bennett," she snapped, breaking to the left and firing at the officers behind the sofa. The good thing about the stunners was that they didn't need to hit any specific part of a person to be effective. A hit to the shoulder was the same as a hit to the chest or even a toe. The officers saw her coming, and they redirected their attack toward her. She sprinted parallel to them, staying just ahead of their fire. She shot at them, the volume of her rounds ensuring she hit them. Both officers dropped from sight, temporarily frozen. Rico dropped the magazine from her pistol, quickly swapping it for her other stunner mag. She dived forward, sliding across the floor to get behind a table. Shots hit the table and ricocheted harmlessly away as she lifted to her knees, pivoting 90 degrees to wind up in a direct line with one of the officers. They stared at one another for a split second. He tried to bring his gun to bear. Too slow. Rico squeezed the trigger. The officer shuddered and collapsed. "Clear," Bennett announced through the comm. "Clear," she repeated, getting back to her feet. A quick survey of the room showed all 10 officers down. The last one she had shot was looking up at her, able to move his eyes, but nothing else. "Sorry about this," she said to him as she stepped over his prone body. "You'll be okay." They hurried out of the building and into the street. A rumble in the distance signaled the approach of a large vehicle. The CSF was closing in. "There," she said, pointing to a pair of police scooters resting along the curb. "Rico," Isaac cried. "Heads up." Rico looked up. A pair of military drones zoomed overhead, slowing and banking to come back around. "Get on." She hopped onto one of the scooters. Isaac mounted it behind her, wrapping his arms around her waist. She squeezed the throttle, and the small transport shot forward, nearly causing Isaac to fall off. They raced along the main street, quickly clearing the square of buildings that boxed in the Proxima government, breaking into a large park. Walking paths crossed manicured lawns, fields of flowers, and sections of trees, each a different species or group of species brought from Earth. Dirt had been brought into the hole to add gently sloping hills and create basins for freshwater ponds where ducks were preening themselves and ignoring the chaos to come. "Move!" Rico shouted, waving her arm at the civilians ahead of her. "Get out of the way!" They scattered as she drove the scooter onto one of the paths. A steady flow of people, the crowd was a mixed blessing, came from the stern end of the ship, back toward the checkpoint where she had entered an hour earlier. They would force the defenders to be more stingy with their shots. But it was also slowing them down. "We've got company," Bennett said through the comm. Rico risked a glance back over her shoulder. The open space behind them had allowed the drones to descend into prime firing position. The CSF transport was visible further back, approaching from a divergent direction. "I can take them out," Bennett said. "Negative. They might hit civilians on the way down." Rico turned her eyes forward again, breaking off the trail and taking to the grass to better avoid the pedestrians. Moving further from the civilians would give the drones a clearer shot, but she didn't want any of them getting hurt because of her.
She sped up, pushing the throttle nearly to its limit. They couldn't outrun the drones, but maybe they could outmaneuver them. She aimed the scooter toward a line of trees, zipping across the grass, Bennett hot on her tail. She started swerving left and right like she was in a slalom, avoiding a straight path to keep the drones from getting a lock. "Almost there," she said, eyeing the trees ahead. The scooter hit an incline, rocketing up it and launching into the air, coming down hard enough to slip out from under she and Isaac. Rico barely managed to maintain control, planting her foot to keep them upright as they went down the other side and into the waiting trees. She glanced back. Bennett was right behind her. So was one of the drones. It entered the small patch of forest still on their tail. She weaved around the trunks, watching for raised roots as she threaded her way through the foliage. The drone behind them opened fire, the rattle of its guns echoing around them as bullets tore into the trees. "Shit!" Isaac cursed behind her. Rico guided the scooter hard to the left, getting it around a tree, which absorbed the rounds that would have otherwise chewed through them. She cut to the right, slamming on the brakes behind another large trunk. She could hear the shift in the drone's thrusters as it slowed to circle in on her. She grabbed her pistol and leveled it where she believed the machine would emerge. The drone banked sideways around the trunk, the wing becoming visible before the cannon could come to bear on them. Rico was ready for it. She emptied her magazine into the drone, the stunner rounds sending an overload of electricity through it. It sparked and hissed before dropping from the air. "Nice," Isaac said. Rico smirked as she snapped the gun back to her hip. Grabbing the handlebars, she spun the scooter back toward the exit to the city. Bennett slowed to come even with her, and they burst from the tree line together, racing across the grass toward the large open hatch leading into the corridors of the Dove. The path ahead was clear, the transport falling further behind. They were going to make it. A sharp scream sounded from somewhere above. Then the ground exploded in front of Rico, pummeling her with a sudden shower of debris and causing her to lose control of the scooter. She dropped it as gracefully as she could, the bodysuit and grass absorbing the impact as both she and Isaac slid to a stop. She pushed herself to her knees, finding Bennett on the ground a few meters away, also getting back to his feet. "Ike, are you okay?" "I'm getting a little tired of falling down," he replied. "What the hell was that?" "I can't believe they fired a rocket in here." She stood up as the drone slowly descended in front of her, stopping at eye level.
"Special Officer Rodriguez," General Hyrie said. "Put your hands over your head and wait for collection. You're under arrest."
15. Rico. Rico looked back at Isaac. She could see the anger and betrayal in his eyes. She was tempted to feel the same, but she couldn't believe Hyrie would sell them out like this. Not after everything he had said at Ghosts. But what if the third party had compromised his position? What if he were under duress? Two more drones approached, settling into a guard position. "Abel, do you copy?" Rico said softly. "Abel, are you there?" There was still no reply. "General, are you on the comm?" "Nothing." "Damn it."
"Special Officer Rodriguez, I repeat," General Hyrie said again. "Put your hands over your head and wait for collection. Don't make me utilize additional force."
Rico put her hands up, folding them on top of her head. Bennett and Isaac did the same. The drones continued to hover around them as the transport, a standard APC, wide and low slung with large wheels and a heavily armored shell, neared, stopping along one of the nearby paths. It had likely come from the CSF barracks beneath the city, carried up from below on a large industrial lift. It was an odd response to the emergency. The APC was slow and not especially maneuverable. A squad of soldiers climbed out. They were all dressed in combat armor and carrying plasma rifles, the dark visors of their helmets hiding their faces. "A little overdressed," Rico said as they approached. They didn't speak as they grabbed her hands, pulling them down behind her back and binding them. They did the same to Bennett and Isaac.
"Sergeant, take them back to the barracks and then transport them to CSF HQ," General Hyrie ordered.
"Yes, sir," the sergeant replied. He put his hand on Rico's back. "Let's go."
Rico didn't resist. Not that she could have if she wanted to.
Her hands were literally tied. She glanced over at Isaac, her eyes apologetic.
"This isn't your fault," Isaac said. "You did your best."
"It wasn't good enough," she replied softly. The Centurion Marines led them to the ramp at the back of the APC. Another squad was already waiting inside. They stood up as Rico, Bennett, and Isaac ascended the ramp into the vehicle.
"Take a seat," the sergeant said.
Rico sat with Isaac beside her and Bennett across from them. The Marines boarded the APC and the sergeant hit the control for the ramp. It slammed closed with a sharp clang. The sergeant grabbed his helmet, lifting it off his head. Rico smiled as his face became visible.
"I know you," she said.
He smiled back.
"I know you, too."
He raised his hand to his neck, rubbing at it.
"It's still sore."
He looked up toward the cockpit.
"Abel, get us the hell out of here."
Rico turned her head in time to see Abel lean out past the driver's seat, her face appearing through the open door to the APC's cockpit.
"On it." "Good to see you again, Rico."
"Good to see you too," Rico replied.
The other Marines were taking off their helmets. She recognized the other Rodriguez and a few of the others who had been sitting outside the reclamation center.
"Damn good to see all of you."
She shifted in her seat, showing her bound hands.
"I don't suppose you can get these off us?"
"Absolutely," the sergeant replied. "My name's Drake, by the way. Former Centurion Space Force Captain Isaiah Drake. That's Jorge, Spot, Lucius, and of course you already know Jesse."
The other Rodriguez clone smiled.
"Hiya, sis."
Jorge crossed the APC, kneeling in front of her. He was probably the youngest of the group. Dark hair, dark skin, and a bright smile. He was a clone too, but she didn't know what model. He tapped on the bracelets, entering the code to unlock them. They fell off her wrists into his waiting hand.
"Thanks," Rico said.
"De nada,"
he replied, repeating the process for Bennett and Isaac.
"You're all former Marines?" Isaac asked. "Not Lucius there," Drake said, pointing to another fresh-faced soldier. "He's still in the academy, or was until this morning."
"I don't understand."
"I do," Rico said. "Part of it, at least. Hyrie had you in position in case something went wrong."
"That's right," Drake replied.
"When the assassins showed up and then the drones, you were already in position in the barracks with Abel. You used the drones to take out the enemy combatants, and then you took over for the real APC crew. Abel didn't answer my hail because she was otherwise occupied."
"Guilty as charged," Abel said, listening in to the conversation from the front.
"Hyrie was worried there was another mole in the organization."
"Which organization? CSF? PCC? The Trust?"
"None of the above. Just the organization."
"I'm totally confused," Isaac said. "Why was I being held like a prisoner? Why the complicated escape?"
"Because it's complicated," Abel said.
It was complicated, but Rico was starting to understand.
"The organization predates Proxima, doesn't it?"
"It does.
It predates the Trife invasion completely by a long time."
"Rico," Isaac said, "can you start over and explain it as dumbed down as possible?"
"I've got a name you might recognize," Abel said. "Dr. Riley Valentine. Does that name mean anything to you?"
Isaac's face paled as he nodded.
"She worked at the lab where I was stationed, where I was put into hibernation. She was studying the Relia and the Axon.
She was a member of the organization. We stepped up our recruitment efforts when the Trife arrived."
"And Hyrie is a member too then?" Rico asked.
"Correct. So are you now, like it or not. The organization is committed to protecting humankind. Beyond politics, beyond laws, beyond morals, if it comes to that. No holds barred, no bullshit. It's a creed we hold sacred. You can't have a division in something as important as defending our species against alien threats."
"So this mole," Rico said. "Any idea who or what it is?"
"It could be a Koron," Isaac said. "Or an Axon."
"Or just a human who doesn't get it," Rico added.
"We don't know. This was an organization operation, which means they infiltrated our ranks. As soon as we figure out who it is, they're dead space. No questions asked. but right now we've got bigger problems.
What kind of problems? Isaac asked. Rico turned to face him.
There's a Relia warship headed for Earth. We think it intends to finish the invasion.
One starship? Isaac said. You have ships. Can't you stop it? Shoot it down or something?
No. For one thing, it's moving over 100 times the speed of light. Even if it slows down as it approaches, that's still way faster than anything our weapons can target.
How can anything move that fast? Isaac asked. Wouldn't it crash into a star or something? The impact at that speed.
You've got some science in you, Abel said. They must have some kind of tech to keep them from colliding with anything.
They'd have to, wouldn't they? Spot said. She was a small woman of Asian descent, with short black hair and a delicate face,
to cross thousands of light years.
For another thing, Rico continued. It's big.
How big? Isaac asked.
Big enough not to be able to blast it out of space even if we could hit it.
So we're going back to Earth to do what?
Warn them about a ship the more advanced human civilization can't stop?
Essentially.
How is that going to help?
Rico opened her mouth to answer. Nothing came out. She closed it again, shaking her head.
I'm not sure. But Hayden's always managed to come through, and the situation is pretty desperate.
How long until the Relia ship arrives?
2 weeks.
It took a week to get from Earth to Proxima. I imagine the round trip is the same?
Normally it would be, but Hyrie outfitted our ship's computer with an experimental algorithm that will hopefully help jump us in closer to Earth.
I don't like the words experimental and hopefully, Isaac replied.
There's a lot not to like about the situation, Rico agreed.
But it is what it is. Complaining won't help.
If you'll excuse me.
She stood and went to the APC's cockpit. Looking through the forward view shield, she could see they were out of Metro and passing through the large vehicle access corridor that led directly to the main hangar. Abel glanced over at her.
Not what you were expecting, is it? She asked.
I never expect things to go according to plan, Rico replied.
But this is a little more outside the norm than usual.
What about Hyrie?
He can take care of himself. And if he can't, the organization will pick him up.
Hyrie said it was better to stay ignorant. But I want to know more about the organization.
It doesn't matter now. Once we leave Proxima, we can't come back. You, me, the group back there. We've got a new role to play.
Where did you pick them up?
Drake and his team.
The Reclamation Center. Good Centurions who made bad choices, either during or after their tours. We didn't pick any of them up quickly, except maybe Lucius. He's Drake's brother, in case you didn't realize. Anyway, the organization's been waiting for this for years.
What?
You knew the Relia were coming?
We knew they would come. We've been preparing.
How do you know it will be enough?
We don't. Not at all.
Heck, if I were putting money on it, I wouldn't bet on us.
Rico shook her head.
That's some vote of confidence.
We've been behind since day one. Survival means beating the odds.
Well, if anyone has a knack for beating the odds, it's Sheriff Duke.
That's what I've heard.
Abel reached forward to tap on one of the control screens. Rico looked out the view shield again. The APC was rolling into the main hangar. So far, everything was normal. Techs moved around the expanse of deck, bringing supplies and tools to the dozen or so starships still kept in the Dove. They were all older models, more boxy and rough than the newer craft. 30 meters long and nearly 10 meters tall, with stubbed wings for atmospheric flight control and an assortment of plasma cannons mounted both beneath the wings and over the fuselage. There was no visible cockpit. It was embedded deep inside the craft behind the armor plating, the pilot able to use both advanced sensors and dozens of external cameras to fly by. Centurions called the model buses because these days they were used solely for transporting VIPs from one city to another. It was strange to Rico to observe the complete non-reaction to the chaos she had been in the middle of only minutes earlier. The entire ship should have been on lockdown while Centurion forces ensured there was no threat to the government. They had fired a rocket inside Metro. But there was nothing. It was business as usual. Would the incident even make it to the evening news? She had a feeling it wouldn't.
powerful players wanted to keep the whole thing quiet. How deep did the veins of secrecy, loyalty, and history run? She knew where they originated, before the Trife came, before Earth was lost, before the generation ships landed here and founded a new human civilization. "We can talk more about the organization once we're off the planet," Abel said. The APC crossed the hangar, heading for one of the buses. The back ramp of the ship was already open and extended, waiting to receive the vehicle into its hold.
"So that's it? They're just going to let us leave?"
"I don't know if let is the right word," Abel replied. "But we are leaving. We glitched the system. We've got about 45 seconds left before the fun starts again."
"Glitched the system?"
Abel smiled.
"A ghost APC is headed back to a barracks full of sleeping centurions. I told you, we've been preparing for a long time, and we're just getting started."
16. Rico.
"Rico, you're flying," Abel said as the APC stopped inside the dropship. The side hatch opened and she headed for it.
"You better get this thing off the deck and out of CSF targeting range in the next 45 seconds or we're toast."
Rico was right behind her.
"They're going to try to shoot us down?"
she asked, realizing she should have expected as much.
"We've already broken about 50 laws.
Rico jumped out of the vehicle behind Abel, turning left and sprinting toward the stairs at the front of the hold. Abel went the other direction, hitting the controls to close the rear ramp. Rico glanced back when she reached the steps. Isaac was out of the APC and following her closely. She scaled the stairs to the main deck, hurrying past the seats there to the bridge at the center of the ship. She tapped the control pad to open the hatch and dropped into the pilot seat, quickly activating the controls. Her primary training was as a pilot, and she had served with Herb Bennett on Earth as his squad's drone operator. In truth, flying the smaller recon drones in gravity with a pair of joysticks and a low-res screen was much more challenging than steering a big spacecraft through the black. The bus began to hum slightly as the reactor came online. 35 seconds. The door to the bridge slid aside. Isaac entered, followed by Abel.
"You sit there,"
Abel said, guiding him to the station to the back and left of Rico. The older woman took the command station, sitting down and strapping in.
"Rico, whenever you're ready."
"Do we need to call it in?" Rico asked.
"Only if you want them to try to stop us sooner."
Rico smirked.
"The outer blast doors are closed. Already handled."
The klaxons around them started flashing, and a loud clang sounded as the doors began to part, Proxima's outer atmosphere pouring in. It was breathable, but harsh, and a stiff wind immediately started blowing through the hangar. The techs below scrambled, unaccustomed to the doors opening without advance notice. 25 seconds.
"Capricorn, this is flight control. We're registering unauthorized power up. Power down immediately. I repeat, power down immediately."
Rico glanced back at Abel, who smiled mischievously.
"Like that's going to happen."
The blast doors continued to part. Rico started increasing the throttle, preparing the ship for takeoff.
"Capricorn, you will comply immediately," Control said.
"Sorry, Control," Rico replied. "I've got a date, and I'm already late."
"Time's running out," Isaac said, pointing up at the displays. 15 seconds. Rico glanced over to their left. Another military APC rolled into the hangar, and armored centurions began jumping out, raising their rifles toward the bus.
"Come on, Rico, time to go," Abel shouted.
Rico looked at the blast doors. They weren't open all the way, but they were open far enough.
"Hold on."
She engaged the main thrusters at full throttle, sending the ship lurching forward, its skids still on the deck. They scraped along the floor as the centurions started shooting, sending plasma bolts into the armor. Rico adjusted the vectoring thrusters, pushing the craft off the deck as it neared the blast doors.
"We're going to hit," Isaac shouted.
"Negative," Rico replied.
She adjusted the vectoring again, and the left wing tipped up higher than the right. Not too much, not too little. They squeezed through the gap between the doors with centimeters to spare, rocketing out and up.
"Nice flying," Abel said,
her voice finally calm.
I'm not done yet, Rico replied.
She was a former Centurion. She understood how planetary defense worked. 5 seconds. Not enough time to get clear of the atmosphere. That was okay. They weren't going to outfly her. The Capricorn continued to ascend, shooting toward the dark purple sky. Marks appeared on the primary display, a warning that a targeting system was searching for a lock. Green shapes appeared on the grid, displayed directly behind the starship's controls, the computer picking up incoming friendlies approaching from the CSF base to the north. Except they wouldn't be so friendly when they arrived. Rico banked south, still climbing. The edges of the primary display turned red, and then the screen split, showing the view from the rear camera. 2 flashes triggered from the planet's surface behind the drones of Praetan, projectiles fired from ground-based launchers. They shot toward the Capricorn in a hurry, giving Rico only seconds to react. It was more than enough. She cut the throttle and rolled the dropship over, pushing heavy Gs as the starship soared back toward the surface. The missiles zipped past, missing their target by less than a meter. They detonated an instant later when the ground control knew they had missed. Rico hit the thrusters again, swooping down and picking up speed. The Centurion fighters closed in, prepared to fire projectiles of their own. The targeting warning resumed, the tracking systems attempting to lock on them once more.
We're going in the wrong direction, Isaac said.
We're going exactly where I want to go, Rico replied.
The bus banked and started climbing, turning into the oncoming fighters. Rico's eyes narrowed as she activated the weapons systems, bringing plasma cannons online.
Rico, you aren't authorized to use force, Abel said.
I don't need your permission, she replied.
The displays showed the Centurion starfighters achieving lock. They loosed their payloads, sending 4 missiles arcing toward the Capricorn. Rico didn't flinch. She stayed on target, firing the plasma cannons directly ahead of the bus. The steady stream captured 3 of the missiles on their way in, detonating them just ahead. The 4th made it through, angling for their bow. She snapped the ship sideways, the projectile flashing past as she continued the roll, coming out level and rapidly closing on the fighters. Her finger rested on the trigger, the reticle slipping over one of the Centurions. If she squeezed the trigger, odds were good she would make the kill. But she didn't want to kill. They were on the same side, even if they didn't all know it. She opened the throttle instead, cutting the ship between the starfighters and launching toward space. The Centurions blurred past and tried to turn around while the ground-based rockets continued to track. The edges of the display turned red again, but this time the screen didn't split. The warnings vanished instead, the defense system suddenly giving up on their escape.
Hyrie shut them down, Abel said before Rico had a chance to ask. We're free and clear.
Roger that, Rico replied.
Shall we set a course for Earth?
17. Hayden.
It took almost 2 hours for Hayden to get everything organized. There was a lot to do, starting with removing the bodies of Cortez and Nan from the warehouse. It was a somber affair. One he always oversaw personally whenever he could. He hated losing people. Even after 2 years and hundreds of casualties, he still felt it when someone died. He still took it personally. It was his failure that had led to their deaths. Whether it was in the planning or execution, he always believed there was something he could have done differently or better. He should have sounded the retreat as soon as the first trife appeared. His assumption that it was a scout group had cost his deputies their lives. Some people wallowed in the blame. Hayden wasn't one of them. Self-pity didn't work. It might soothe his guilt, but it would also leave him a weak mess, and the world already had enough of those. Too many people counted on him to be strong, to stand up for justice and keep the peace. The best way to honor the lives that were lost was to do the best job he could do. Every single day. Without fail, without complaint, without hesitation. He helped carry Cortez out on a stretcher, holding up the front end while Salino and Kevitz took the rear. Hayden wasn't a muscled behemoth, but his augments did offer him more strength and stamina than an average human possessed. But he did feel the strain in his legs,
especially in his knees. And he felt it in his right arm, where the augment's control ring connected to the organic tissue, muscles, and nerves. His career was a dangerous one, and had led him to replace that arm multiple times. Too many times. The entire system was damaged, leaving him in near-constant pain. He lived with it, again without complaint. It was a reminder of his mission, and what he had lost. They brought Cortez to a helicopter. A Bell Iroquois his wife Natalia and her team of mechanics and engineers had brought back to life with the help of a network of scavengers. The chopper was rusty and dirty, but it was functional and valuable, carrying personnel and supplies across the United Western Territories, connecting the cities of Sanisco, Sonosa, Tijuana, La Vega, Haven, and Digo. Except the last three weren't really cities anymore. A run-in with the hunger had cost him almost half the population of the UWT and left those areas in ruin. They would rebuild in time, but for now the survivors had been coming north to Sanisco, the capital, huddling up for safety in the wake of the destruction. That was only part of the fallout. The reduced control of the cities had brought the rats out of hiding with the belief there was an opening to seize back some of what Hayden had taken. Would-be warlords and gangs had moved into the abandoned areas, along with scavengers, thieves, and traffickers, all looking for whatever scraps they could find. The warehouse had been home to one of those gangs. The intervention here intended to be a signal to the others that law still existed in the UWT, and nobody could ignore it without bringing the sheriff down on them. Maybe the message was still intact, but at what cost? Two deputies, killed by trife that didn't belong.
"I'll make sure you didn't die for nothing," Hayden said as he helped place the stretcher inside the helicopter.
The pilot, Bronson, strapped it in.
"Sorry about Cortez and Nan, Sheriff," he said. "They were good people."
"Paz," Hayden agreed.
"Bring them home and then circle back."
"Roger," Bronson replied.
"Try not to die in the meantime. You know me."
Bronson nodded and moved to the cockpit of the chopper. Hayden, Salino, and Kevitz backed away, joining the deputies the pilot had delivered earlier. The Rangers were Hayden's most skilled team of deputies, special forces who had gone through Centurion Space Force, training with Rico and with Bennett before her. Except most of Bennett's trainees were gone now, too. More fallout from his fight against the hunger. The Rangers standing in front of him were a mostly new group and weren't as experienced as he would have liked. Hicks was the squad leader and the longest tenured deputy on Hayden's staff. The man was his former chief deputy who had begged to be part of the Rangers to help get them back into fighting shape following their losses. While there had been a time when Hayden and Hicks were enemies, but that time was long past.
"Rangers," Hayden said, acknowledging them.
They snapped to attention, arms down at their sides.
"Sheriff Duke, sir."
"Chief Ranger Hicks, are we ready to go?"
Hayden asked. The helicopter's engines raised in pitch behind him as Bronson prepared for takeoff.
"Yes, Sheriff," Hicks replied.
"Ready and eager."
"Then let's do this. Salino, Kevitz, you have the door."
"Roger, Sheriff,"
the two deputies replied. Hayden knew they both wanted to go back into the warehouse to make amends for the deaths of Cortez and Nan. But the Rangers were better trained and better armed, and they needed someone outside the building, keeping watch for both returning Trife scouts and possible human intervention.
"Salino," Hayden said.
"Helmet, please."
He handed Salino his hat and glasses, accepting a helmet in return. He pulled it over his head, the base clicking when it latched to the connector in the combat armor. A HUD popped up in his visor, and then the armor indicated it was networked with the rest of the Rangers. Five designations appeared across the top of the visor, each outlined in green to show they were healthy.
"This is Sheriff Duke, Comcheck.
Ranger 1 online," Hicks said.
"Ranger 2 online," a woman's voice announced.
Hayden glanced at her designation on the HUD. Her surname was Jackson.
"Ranger 3 online,"
another man said. Bach.
"Ranger 4 online,"
a third man announced. Rollins.
"Ranger 5 online,"
a second woman said. Ivanov.
"All units online," Hicks said. "We're ready to roll, Sheriff."
"Pause that,"
Hayden replied,
leading the group back into the warehouse. He grabbed his plasma rifle from his back and turned it on, keeping it level in front of him. With the Queen dead, the Trife would be less inclined to fight until they were threatened. He had every intention of threatening them. He crossed the warehouse to the corner, the night vision in the helmet keeping the quality of his vision stable even as the amount of light decreased. He came to a stop in front of the hole the Trife had climbed from. Their claw marks were easily visible in the rock beneath the building's floor, which had cracked, crumbled, and collapsed into an underground excavation. There was no obvious sign of Trife below, either visually or on the advanced tactical combat system sensors, meaning the hole continued beyond the immediate area.
"Do Trife dig tunnels?"
Hicks asked, coming up beside Hayden and looking into the hole.
"Not that I've ever heard of or seen," Hayden replied. "But they evolve quickly." "Do you think it's a response to the Goliaths?"
Hayden glanced at the Ranger Chief. The Goliaths were the only reason the UWT was able to remain as Trife-free as it did.
"We can't rule it out."
He looked back at the hole. If the Trife were tunneling below the surface to get around the Goliaths, the people of the UWT might be in for a new deadly threat before they recovered from the last one. But not if he could help it. 18. Hayden. Hayden and his Rangers descended into the hole on a pair of ropes, landing on hard earth nearly 10 meters below the warehouse floor.
"I don't get the impression that hole was supposed to be there," Hicks said, looking up at the breach.
"It probably collapsed during the fighting," Hayden replied, referring to the Relia attack on the city. He turned in a circle. The bad news was that the excavation was a tunnel after all, and it stretched into the darkness headed both north and south. The good news was that it appeared to be human-made, not Trife-made. There was no evidence of claw marks on any of the walls, though there were more than a few scrapes and scratches in the floor and leading up to the warehouse.
"Wrong place, wrong time?" Hicks asked.
"It seems that way. The Trife were probably passing through and saw the hole. We just happened to be there when they did.
The thing about that is queens don't normally migrate."
"You think something stole her food source?"
"Or it died. Some of the reactors are nearing their end of life."
"That makes more sense.
What do you think, Sheriff? Do we split up?"
"No, strength in numbers."
Hayden followed the marks on the floor.
"It looks like they're heading north."
"Then I take it we're heading north?"
"Pause.
Stand by."
Hayden switched channels on the comm.
"Salino, do you copy?"
"I copy, Sheriff," Salino replied. "What's up?"
"We found a tunnel beneath the warehouse. We're going to follow it north. Do you have my comm position?"
"How do I get your position, Sheriff?"
"The glasses. Put them on and tap the side to activate the ATCS. It'll link to the nearest sister signal if it finds one."
"Roger."
Hayden waited for Salino to do as he instructed. The glasses were a scaled-back version of the same combination of system-on-a-chip computer brain and visor-mounted heads-up display in the combat armor. It would allow the deputy to link into their network. He would have had Salino do it earlier, but the battery in the glasses wouldn't last nearly as long as the power supply embedded in the back of Hayden's armor. Hayden knew when Salino had joined because the designation came up in the HUD. He switched back to the team comm channel.
"Welcome to the party, Salino."
"Thank you, Sheriff," Salino replied.
Hayden glanced at Hicks.
"You and I have point. V formation."
"Roger."
"Salino, follow us from above."
"Roger, Sheriff."
Hayden moved out ahead of the other Rangers with Hicks, and they started walking along the tunnel.
"How far do we take it?" Hicks asked.
"Until we find the Trife or lose contact with Salino," Hayden replied.
"We can't let them make another queen, especially this deep inside UWT territory."
"Roger that."
They kept walking. The tunnel started to curve after a while, the heading changing from north to northeast, and then to the east as they reached the 1-hour mark. The depth remained the same, The passage sitting a short distance beneath the ground, passing uninterrupted beneath the city and past its outer perimeter. Deputy Salino remained dutifully above, following the signal as best he could. Hayden lost contact with him a few times as they passed beneath the wreckage of a building or through a particularly dense portion of rock, but they always reconnected before they had to turn back. Another hour went by. Hayden passed a message to Bronson through Salino to ground the helicopter somewhere safe and wait for instruction. There was no sense burning limited fuel for no reason. The tunnel continued, straightening out on an eastern route and spreading far enough ahead to vanish into darkness. Hayden and the Rangers spent 2 more hours traveling the tunnel, at which point Hayden started to become concerned. He had thought there might be another exit somewhere along the route, a sealed hatch or something. That didn't seem to be the case. They were 4 hours deep into the passage, with no clear way back to the surface and no idea how much further they would have to go. Did it make sense to follow the trife if the tunnel didn't end anytime soon? Hayden decided he would give it another hour. If they didn't discover anything worthwhile by then, they could mark the spot and head back to the warehouse. With the right equipment, they could make a new hole and rejoin the search from there.
Is Halya talking yet?
Hicks asked, trying to make conversation to help pass the time.
A little, Hayden replied. She's got Mama down cold.
Hicks laughed.
What about Dada? I think she'll get Ginny before she gets Dada. Her big sister spends more time with her than Nat and me combined. How is that going? Ginny, I mean.
Hayden smiled behind his helmet. Ginny was a stray, an orphan who had latched on to Hayden after he saved her life in Digo. She was a good kid, a strong kid. She had become part of the family almost by default.
It's a shame her parents didn't live to see what she's growing into, he replied. She's going to have an impact somewhere. Sheriff or engineer? Maybe both. She's fearless and curious. And I think that's rubbing off on Hal a little bit, too. You're a lucky man, Sheriff. I don't know how you do it. I sure am. What about you? What about me? I don't get enough time off to get into any relationships. That's not what I heard. What did you hear?
Hayden laughed again.
That a certain chief ranger has been seen spending a lot of time hovering around medical. But that has nothing to do with Nurse Tia. I will neither confirm or deny that statement. In fact, I...
Hicks's voice cut off as he identified the sudden appearance of a red mark on his HUD. Hayden saw it too, and he immediately brought the squad to a stop, aiming his rifle forward. It appeared a moment later, a single trife bounding toward them through the passage.
I've got this one, Hicks said, taking aim. Hicks, wait, Hayden said.
The trife kept coming in long strides on all fours, racing at them like they weren't even there. Hayden moved aside to let it pass, and it continued through the Rangers without slowing, vanishing a few seconds later.
What the hell? Jackson said.
A tense silence enveloped them. Hayden turned back to the passage, sharing the Rangers' sentiment. The behavior was strange. Trife always traveled in groups. This one seemed like it was running away. But from what? Hayden looked forward again. He started walking cautiously ahead, a single step at a time, rifle raised and ready to fire. The Rangers did the same. Another red mark appeared on the HUD. Hayden didn't stop moving this time. The trife ran between him and Hicks, ignoring them in its desperate effort to escape.
Are you sure we should be going forward? Bach asked.
Another red mark appeared. And then 2 more. The trife raced past them.
Salino, Hayden said, what's the situation topside?
Sheriff, Salino replied. Everything's clear up here.
What's my relative position?
You're under the street. There's a building straight ahead, a big one. It's got some lettering still on it. Hold on. Department of HEA and UMAN Services. I don't know, Sheriff. Some of the letters are missing.
Hayden wished Isaac was with him.
The Marine would probably know what the building was. Not that it mattered. Whatever was sending the trife running, it was down here, not up there.
Sheriff, Hicks said, getting Hayden's attention. The chief ranger was pointing his rifle toward the side of the tunnel. A dead trife was there, its arm missing. The wound to the shoulder was jagged and deep.
It looks like something took a bite out of it, Jackson said.
Sure does, Hayden agreed. That would explain why so few of the trife were returning. And I want to know what.
He broke into a run. The other rangers howled and followed behind him, encouraged by his lack of fear. The sound of hissing and groaning became increasingly loud as Hayden charged, along with a noise like a wet towel slapping the ground. A few more trife ran the other direction as he approached, his HUD lighting up with a few more red marks, and then finally, a larger one. The tunnel was dark, and the edge of the night vision's range left everything shrouded in silhouette and shadow. Even with his limited sight, Hayden could make out the scene of chaos and violence approaching. There were already dozens of dead trife on the ground, their blood making the floor of the tunnel slick, their smell making Hayden nauseous. They littered the area, each of them with a bite taken from somewhere on their bodies. In some cases, multiple bites. Movement in the shadows, combined with the ATCS sensors, revealed about 20 trife still fighting back against a much larger target. One with multiple limbs, each of them independently trying to grab a trife.
How did we get to hell without a road sign?
Rollins said, his voice deep and scratchy. The creature seemed to notice them. It lurched forward, its large shape slipping from the shadows and revealing a grotesque alien form. 19. Hayden. The alien was nearly the height of the tunnel, its full form challenging to discern in the darkness. It seemed as though it was composed of tentacles, dozens of which spread out from a central mass, forcing it to remain bent in the confines of the passage. Its flesh was slimy and moist, mottled and peeling. The end of each appendage featured an individual wide mouth of sharp teeth beneath a series of multifaceted eyes. There were more eyes on the central mass as well, along with a primary maw that could easily swallow any of them whole. Hayden wasn't easy to frighten. This thing terrified him.
Oh, hell no,
Rollin said, pulling to a stop. He didn't wait for the order to start shooting, immediately unleashing bolt after bolt from his plasma rifle at the creature. The bolts lit up the tunnel, the sudden flashes disrupting everyone's night vision. Hayden cursed as his eyes tried to adjust, his visor bathed in pure white and hiding the monster from view. He could hear its groaning increase in volume as the plasma struck it, but he couldn't see if the attack was having any effect.
Hold your fire until you can see, he shouted through the comm.
He could still see the red outline of the creature on his HUD, the sensors trying to keep up with the movement of its tentacles. Rollins screamed, and Hayden watched his designation turn orange, indicating he was wounded. Impatient, Hayden grabbed his helmet and ripped it from his head, tossing it aside and spinning toward the stricken ranger. One of the tentacles had reached out and grabbed Rollins, wrapping around him while the mouth at the end was clamped down on his arm, his combat armor keeping it from shearing the limb off. Hayden fired plasma into the tentacle, satisfied when the flesh melted away beneath the gas and the appendage relaxed. His victory was short-lived. He caught movement from the corner of his eye, just barely dropping beneath one of the tentacles as it tried to scoop him up.
Fire at will,
he heard Hicks shout, the helmets finally adjusting. The chief ranger started shooting, targeting the creature's central mass. It reacted immediately, wrapping a pair of tentacles around its face and blocking the bolts. The weapon was able to hurt it, digging deep gouges in the limbs that began to leak bodily fluids. But how much damage could each tentacle absorb? The creature heaved itself toward them, using some tentacles for locomotion and sending half a dozen forward at the rangers. They shifted their fire to match, pounding the limbs with plasma as they tried to back away. It still had Rollins and was pulling it back toward its gaping primary mouth. Hayden charged forward, continuing to fire at the appendage, each bolt taking another piece out of the wet flesh. Two more tentacles came at Hayden, dropping from over his head,
He dove aside as they hit the ground with a familiar wet slap. He rolled back to his feet, switching his plasma rifle from bolt mode to stream. He held down the trigger, a blast of superheated gas spreading 3 meters out ahead of him and into the tentacles. The alien gurgled loudly in response, nearly every tentacle on the thing suddenly reaching for Hayden. He swung the rifle across his body, keeping them back, while the Rangers blasted the creature with enough firepower to take out a tank. The monster's limbs began to fall away, detaching as they became too damaged, and before they could negatively impact the rest of the creature. Four of them fell dead in a matter of seconds. It wasn't enough. Rollins screamed again, the tentacle holding him nearing the monster's primary mouth. Hayden didn't give up. He kept charging, switching to a single-handed grip on his rifle and pulling one of his revolvers. He aimed and fired, sending bullets into the tentacle clutching Rollins.
"Let go, you son of a bitch," he hissed.
His plasma rifle ran out of fuel, sputtering out. The creature didn't hesitate, its tentacles closing in on him again. He punched the first one that reached for him, knocking it aside. Then he tossed his revolver from his right hand to his left, closing his right fist. The Axon blade extended from his augment, and he slashed it through the next tentacle to get too close, cutting the head off it completely. Rollins screamed one last time as the creature dropped his body into its mouth, and he disappeared.
"No!"
Hayden cried, slashing another tentacle off. A second grabbed his ankle and pulled, yanking him off his feet. It lifted him into the air, where two more reached for him with gaping mouths. Plasma bolts hit the limbs, forcing them off course, while Hayden curled up and slashed the one that had grabbed him. He fell back to the ground, the crash absorbed by his armor. He rolled sideways as another limb tried to smash him, and then stood up in front of the creature. It reared up in front of him, pressing against the top of the tunnel and filling the entire thing. More tentacles reached for him, and he noticed it had left its central mass unprotected.
"Hit the center,"
he shouted, firing at its mouth. His bullets vanished into its throat, and it began screaming much louder, clearly in pain. The Rangers reacted instantly, shifting their aim from the tentacles to its head. Dozens of bolts dug into it before it could defend itself. Blood and ichor poured from its mouth. A number of appendages reached for Hayden in a last-ditch effort to grab him. He punched and clawed them away, their speed diminished, the monster finally dying. The Rangers advanced toward it with renewed hope, pounding it with plasma. It howled one final time and died. 20. Hayden. Hayden wrinkled his face. The smell from the fresh carcass was nearly unbearable, made more so because he knew where it was coming from. He turned back to Hicks, who was in the process of changing the cell on his plasma rifle.
"Is everyone else okay?" he asked.
Hicks nodded.
"I think I'm going to have nightmares for weeks, but I'm good otherwise."
"Sheriff," Jackson said, holding his helmet out to him.
Hayden took it and slid it back on. The network reconnected a few seconds later. He felt like someone punched him in the gut when he saw Rollins' red designation. Another dead deputy. Damn it.
"Where did that thing come from?"
Ivanov said. It was the first time she had spoken since the Rangers had arrived.
"It's Relia," Hayden said. "Part of the Hunger."
"How do you know?"
Hicks asked. "Because it isn't from Earth. And it isn't an intellect." "What is it doing underground?"
"Good question. We need to find out."
"Sheriff,"
Ivanov said. She had his plasma rifle. He accepted it too, dropping the spent cell out of it and replacing it with a fresh one.
"Thanks."
He approached the central mass of the creature. He didn't want to look into its mouth, but he needed to know if there was enough left of Rollins to bury. There wasn't.
"Rollins?"
Hicks asked. Hayden shook his head.
"I'm sorry. You did your best to save him, more than any of us could have done. We're lucky to only lose one against that thing."
Hayden nodded, though it wasn't much comfort. He climbed over the prone tentacles, getting past the carcass to continue along the tunnel, the Rangers following behind him.
The Trife were all gone, having fled during the fighting. The path ahead was clear.
"Celino, what's our relative position?" Hayden asked.
"You're almost directly under the front of that building," Celino replied. "The door is gone, but it has a reinforced metal seal still intact behind it."
Interesting. What kind of building was this that it was armored against intrusion?
"Do you see any windows?"
"Now that you mention it, not until about 8 meters up. And they're all still intact. No sign of squatters or scavengers getting inside."
"Very interesting. Bach, I want you to stay in position here to maintain the network link to Deputy Celino."
"Roger, Sheriff," Bach replied.
Hayden led the rest of the Rangers forward at a quick walk, eager to figure out what this was all about. He didn't have to go far. The tunnel ended 50 meters later, at a metal blast door that had been torn open by the tentacled Relia as though it were made of paper.
"Jailbreak?"
Jackson ventured, eyeing the damage.
"Seems like it," Hayden replied. "But unless Proxima scientists are hiding inside, why would that thing have waited 200 years to break out?"
He approached the ravaged metal. The hole was a lot smaller than the creature, which must have compressed itself to slide through. He stepped inside and found himself standing in what looked like an airlock. The room was filthy from the passage of time. Dozens of small nozzles lined the walls and ceiling, and there was a drain in the center of the floor. A second seal sat directly in front of him, also punctured.
"What do you think?"
Hicks asked, stepping through the hole into the room.
"Looks like it was intended to sanitize people on their way through this door." "To keep something from getting out or to keep something from getting in?"
"Good question."
"Let's go find out," Hayden said, waiting for the others to step through the seal.
Hayden was impressed by the way they were handling the situation, staying focused despite what they had just seen and despite the death of their squadmate. Hicks and Rico had trained them well.
"Stay